I'm Deborah Thomas. My brother was David Morris, the man wrongfully convicted for the Clydach murders in South Wales 22 years ago. My brother died in prison in August of last year, an innocent man. I'm determined, or we as a family are determined, to carry on and fight to clear his name.
Well, first of all, well done, Deborah, because for so many people, they just shrug their shoulders and say, you know, what can we do against the establishment? But can you explain why you think it was a miscarriage of justice? And we're talking about 1999, 2000, a long time ago, aren't we?
It was a long time ago. Yes, it was a long time ago. Originally, there were three suspects arrested. Two were actual serving police officers. There was a third. She was a serving police officer, but retired. She was retired at the time of the murders. They were the original suspects. We weren't just suspects. They had a lot of, let's say, evidence to support them being originally arrested. Unfortunately, my brother's name came into the picture and they dropped all original charges, but they dropped everything against those three and just focused and did whatever they could to get a conviction with my brother.
I mean, these were particularly horrific set of murders, weren't they?
Absolutely horrific. Absolutely horrific. Two innocent children, an innocent grandmother, old lady, lying in her bed, defenseless old lady. They were all defenseless. They were all defenseless. They were all innocent, innocent people, children. Sorry, I'm awful sorry. I get very upset when I talk about it. The thought of it is just horrific. They were just innocent people. They were murdered, and the reasons that the prosecution gave for my brother to murder them all was because he went there and Mandy rejected his advances for sex, so he murdered them all while he was drunk and on drugs. He murdered them all.
Okay, so in a proper police investigation, one of the main things is actually forensic evidence, actual evidence on the ground. So what is there in the terms of evidence that convinces you that your brother just simply wasn't involved?
There was a gold chain found at the scene. Originally, my brother denied the chain was his. At the end of the day, he was being questioned for four murders, and he was obviously scared to admit the chain was his. He did eventually admit the chain was his. That's the only thing they had to link my brother to the scene. The chain was found obviously at the scene, but our problem is, and everybody else can see, that the chain was underneath a wire. It wasn't pulled off his neck and found on top of anything. It was underneath a wire. If that was pulled off his neck, how did it get underneath the wire? If he was high on drink and drugs, and this is a reason why he went into a frenzied attack, how did he manage to clean up all his DNA or any evidence of him being there?
And what about these police officers, these three police officers? What are their names? And is there any evidence to link them?
There were sightings of the twins. Stephen and Stuart Lewis are twins, identical twins. There was sightings by numerous people. They were all completely, their evidence meant, it was whitewashed. They just completely whitewashed and said they weren't credible. They were lying. There were other witnesses that weren't called who saw Stephen Stuart on the night. Alison, there was a lot of witnesses to say that Alison and Mandy, they were having an affair. Stephen denied that he had any knowledge of this affair when witnesses all knew that this affair was going on. There was too many witnesses of the sightings. They had the motives. They had everything they needed for a conviction.
The only thing is, these were fellow police officers. But look, what about sightings? I mean, this is obviously important. If these police officers were seen coming or going from the house at the time before the police arrived officially and before the murders took place.
Well, the thing is, Stuart Lewis was on duty that night. He went missing for 4 hours. He's never been held accountable for being missing for 4 hours. He lost his logbook. He lost the log of the car. He has never been able to explain where he was. Sorry, yes, he did say he was in. He was called to an incident where there was a police dog, a police handler who had been bitten or something to that effect. But there was never any evidence of him being there because he had lost his logbook. He was never called to the trials because there was two trials. He was never called to the trials. He was the senior officer at the scene. He didn't secure the scene. He left the scene, leaving a PC in charge. He didn't secure it. He went back to the police station. He didn't tell his superiors that they'd all been murdered. Martin Lloyd-Evans was on the Sky programme saying that maybe Stephen felt uncomfortable and he needed to leave the scene. I forget his word and I'm sorry, because he knew that he thought, oh my God, my brother's wife is seeing this woman who's been murdered. Maybe that's why he left the scene. Well, apparently they didn't know about the affair, so why would he even think that?
Well, it does sound incredible that potentially a serving police officer on duty might be involved in investigating the murder that they had just committed.
Yeah, it does sound incredible. It's even more incredible that he was never called to court to give evidence. He was a senior officer at the scene. They're supposed to be called in court. They're supposed to give evidence of the scene. That's the whole role of being a senior officer, but he was never called.
Have you managed to get anywhere, do you think, with making sure that your brother is shown to be innocent and getting the police called to account, maybe a retrial or something?
It was very difficult because we're up against the police. But I mean, there's so many inconsistencies in the police role in my brother's conviction. We can prove that they've lied, but we're up against a massive force. It's just us against them, and they're doing everything they can. I mean, they've announced that they're going to do forensic testing. We asked for transparency. There's been no transparency at all. They've said there was a connection with some forensic findings they found with a sock that was used where they wore the sock when they were holding the pole to murder this innocent family. They said there's a link, a probability that it was my brother's. They have refused to hand over that forensic report. We know nothing about what they tested. All they're saying about is the sock. When we gave them a list of items we wanted testing, we asked if we could oversee our forensic expert, oversee what they were doing, what testing they were doing. There was none of it. There was none of that at all. We know nothing about what was tested. We don't know any techniques. We know absolutely nothing about what's in that report.
I wonder whether this is just a one-off with South Wales Police. It clearly isn't with the police in general. We've had the Wayne Cousins murdering Sarah Everard in a particularly horrific fashion, which the criminologists have suggested that he may well have murdered prostitutes in the past in a similar way. Wayne Cousins, that is, who was not only a serving Metropolitan Police officer, but he was one of the most trusted, an armed police officer who were protecting diplomatic staff and even the royal family. So if it can happen at that level, then in a way, the South Wales Police is kind of small fry. But I wonder, have other people in Wales come to you or have you seen other miscarriages of justice, do you think, since then going on in South Wales?
South Wales Police are notorious for their miscarriage of justice. They're absolutely notorious. And yes, I've spoken to her, and I've obviously got involved with a lot of other families of miscarriage of justice. They are absolutely notorious for the miscarriage of justice.
Well, have you got any other examples then?
There was the Cardiff 3, the Cardiff 5, the Lynette, the Cardiff 5 was the Lynette White case, Annette Ewens, I forget off the top of my head now, but they've got quite a few miscarriages of justice under their belt. The Darvell brothers and the sex shop murder. There's so many miscarriages of justice that's gone on with South Wales Police, so many.
Well, it's pretty horrific, isn't it? The idea that you simply cannot trust the people who are supposed to be there in a situation like this.
Well, no, I mean, the Lynette White case for a start. I mean, the same, one of the officers, Coots, involved in that case and all the wrongdoings that went on that case was the same police officer involved in my brother's case. Now, that case collapsed because paperwork went missing. And miraculously then, after it had collapsed, they found the paperwork. How incompetent are they, or is it deliberate?
Well, that certainly does sound deliberate. I mean, they seem to be behaving, certainly in your case and other cases that you mentioned, like almost like a gang, an organised crime gang. And we know that the police have to work quite closely with organised crime, with informants. Just last week we heard that over in Northern Ireland, the Irish police had informants that were actually murdering Catholics for example, loyalist terrorists carrying out the most horrific sectarian murders, going in and killing a load of people with a gun just simply because they were in a Catholic frequented place. You know, these people had done absolutely nothing. Yeah. But I mean, with all these, I mean, it's a bit difficult to know what to do about this, other than, of course, the professional standards within the police. The Home Office, for example, should be doing something about this. They're doing nothing. Priti Patel's department. But at the end of the day, the last court of appeal, once you've been through the judicial system, is the media. I wonder, have the media covered these murders?
In South Wales, yes, but not nationally. It's only now that Sky have made this programme that it's gone further afield. Other than that, no, it's not really gone out of Wales.
Anyway, I know you're organising, you're certainly not going away. You're organising a meeting coming up soon with the former MS, that's a member of the Senedd, and also the deputy leader of the Cardiff Council, Daniel McAvoy.
Yeah.
On the 7th of March, which is a Tuesday, in at 169 Bar and Kitchen in Cardiff, you're charging £10 to come in, although that does include food. And I imagine if people wanted to come in without paying a £10 and not having the food, you might not turn them away. But anyway, we shall see. 7:30 p.m. On Tuesday, the 7th of March. Now, what's this meeting? What's the purpose of it, Deborah?
Well, we've got to do whatever we can to keep putting my brother's case out there. We can't just sit back and let things happen. We've got to keep talking about it. We've got to keep being public. We've got to just do whatever we can to spread the word. And obviously, we need support and help from MPs, AMs. We need pressure put on the police to release the report to us for a start. But not just that, it's not just about releasing the report, it's about everything that's gone on in my brother's case, and the public need to know everything that's gone on in my brother's case, because I couldn't make this kind of thing up. I genuinely could not make what's happened in my brother's case up, and people need to know, the public need to know. The thing is that what I'm trying to say is as well, nothing has changed within the police force. Nothing has changed at all from 50 years ago, 20 years ago, my brothers. Nothing has changed. It's still as corrupt as it ever was.
Well, I suppose the message is, if nothing is done about this, then it's just going to be another succession of murders by the police, or that the police are involved in covering up because they've got criminal friends they're covering up for, into the future, and who knows where it's going to strike next, this evil.
Absolutely. And I mean, the thing is, this happened to us. This is our life. Unfortunately, this is our life now. But this could be somebody else's life. If nothing changes within the police, this is going to be somebody else's story as well. This, nothing has changed. It's going to carry on. It's just going to carry on.
Now, did you manage to go and visit Di in prison? And I wonder, how did he take it? And how have you taken it all?
we went to see my brother regular as a family, and we all, you know, went to see my brother regular. I think my brother, we haven't coped. It's completely ruined our lives. It's completely turned our lives upside down in every way you can possibly think of. My brother stayed strong for us, and we stayed strong for him. You know, it, I mean, obviously it killed him. He had a heart attack a few years ago, and it was his heart that killed him. Now he became a diabetic while he was insulin dependent. I mean, his health just deteriorated so, so badly. The stress of everything on my mother, my mother had vascular dementia. I think the stress of everything killed my mother. I mean, the stress has been, I can't even begin to describe what it's been like as a family. It's been unbearable, absolutely unbearable. And to lose my brother in prison is something I still can't talk about. I still can't talk about it.
So how old was he when he died then, your last year?
My brother was 58, 59. There's 3.5 years between us. Yeah, he was 59.
And how long was he supposed to have been in there for? And was he due to be released at some point? I mean, he's already been in there, it sounds to me like, for over 20 years.
Yeah. No, he would have been there for the rest of his life. The only way you'd be released is if you admit guilt, and that was never going to happen. So he would have been there for the rest of his life. And unfortunately, he was actually there till the end of his life.
So he was on a principle, is that, no, I didn't do this. I'm not going to admit to it. Even though this is the sort of plea bargain type thing we get from America, isn't it? Where they say, oh, well, if you admit that you did it, then you can go free.
Yeah. That's basically it. Yeah. He had no privileges because he didn't go on any of the rehabilitation courses, because he's obviously not going to go on the wouldn't have gone on any rehabilitation courses, because you've got to admit guilt to go on the courses, and that was never going to happen. He had no privileges like other prisoners, simply because he wouldn't admit guilt. So no, he would have and did spend all his life there then.
Amazing. Well, it sounds to me like Di was quite a man of principle, Deborah.
Yeah, well, principle in this, because you're not going to admit to something as horrific as this if you didn't do it.
So if listeners are interested, how can they help support what you're doing, Deborah?
We have a defence team. We have a really good defence team, actually. They were my brother's defence team, but they've carried on working for us. When we lost my brother, they've carried on working for us to fight South Wales Police.
Well, isn't it appalling when your local police force become evil, become the enemy? I mean, you know, so anyway, Deborah Thomas, thank you very much for joining us. Just like to reiterate that the meeting is with the politician Neil McAvoy on Tuesday, the 7th of March, 169, that's O-N-E, and the number 169 Bar and Kitchen in Cardiff. And that starts at 7:30. Tickets are £10, and you get a little bit bite to eat as well. And also, you get to do something about the horrific miscarriages of justice that have been going on in South Wales. Deborah Thomas, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.